Last week we were talking about Acts 20 at verse 7 and trying to understand as best we can any information that would help us figure out how often the Christians in the first century would take the Lord's Supper. Because there's no specific statement. Jesus did make the statement, as often as you do this, we show the Lord's death until he comes. And so there is Okay, I'm unmuted, and it's a good thing that I noticed that I was unmuted because...
Recording in progress.
I forgot to push the reset button. There, it's clear that this is not a one-time event, at least in my mind, that this is something that we do with regularity. And every time we do it, these are the things that ought to characterize our participation in the Lord's Supper. So as we were looking at Acts 20 at verse 7, and we looked at the phrase on the first day of the week, I just pointed out that according to Thayer's definition, this word that's translated "the" is a definite article, but it could just as well be translated "this" or "that" or "these," and if in my mind, there's a significant difference in the way that this passage reads if we were to translate it on this first day of the week when the disciples came together to break bread. And the only way that you know whether it's the or this or that or these is to look at the context. So there is some question in my mind how we ought to understand the first day of the week. Well, there's not really a question as much as I understand that some people see it differently, and the way that they see it may be based on biblical information. As we were discussing this, John mentioned Exodus 20 at verse 8. And in Exodus 20, of course, Old Testament, different time, God says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And I think, and we have frequently drawn a parallel between this statement, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, and Acts 20 at verse 7, and we say every time that there's a Sabbath day, you need to keep it holy. And that's implied in the translation, remember the Sabbath day. Now, a couple of things occur to me. That really makes the point that here in Acts 20 at verse 7, it would have some significant impact on the way that we understand the passage if instead of saying on the first day of the week, it said on this first day of the week. And remember, that's just a translator's decision. That's the first thing. This kind of makes the point that I was making about the definite article. So second point is I tried to look at this word that's been translated the Sabbath, and I think everybody knows it's going to be a Hebrew word. It's not going to be a Greek word, so it's definitely not going to be the same word. I tried to look that up in the Septuagint, but my research tools wouldn't let me do that. The Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Hebrew by the Jews around the end of the second century, the second century BC. And I thought that might be helpful. Well, that really didn't help. And I was trying to get over to the university so I could look that up. And they have their library closed to outsiders because of COVID. And I couldn't get in. So that's a difficulty that I'll try to resolve in the future. But the what I could learn about this word in Exodus 20, according to Brown Driver Briggs, and Brown Driver Briggs is to the Old Testament like Strong's and Thayer's are to the New Testament. It's the best lexicon that I know of, and it's generally accepted as being pretty accurate. They make the point that this word, and there is a specific word for the Sabbath. It's a definite direct object, they say. But then they have this to say. It's not translated in English. So when he says, remember the Sabbath, the doesn't capture the meaning of that word for a Hebrew reader. It's just not sufficient to capture that word. I don't know exactly how to understand all of that, but it is, according to Brown, Driver, and Briggs, an untranslated article. So I'll continue to do some research on this, and thanks to John for mentioning Hebrew or Exodus 20 at verse 8, and we'll keep working on this. But just understand that to note the similarity, the first day of the week, and remember the Sabbath, we need to be very careful, because that similarity may or may not be there. It's there in English, but frequently what we get in English is the translator's ideas instead of really getting exactly what the original language says. So I didn't forget about this. I will continue to look for this information. But I'm going to have to wait until they relax their COVID restrictions over at the library. So let's look at 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter, and see if we can gather any information from 1 Corinthians 16 that would help us to understand what's going on here in Acts 20. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, the apostle says, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I've given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Now these are saints in Jerusalem who were having great difficulty, or in Judea, that were having great difficulty because of the famine that had happened in that part of the world. And as the apostle Paul was traveling among the churches in Asia, he was taking up funds that could be used to help to support those saints in Jerusalem. So he's giving this same instruction to churches in Galatia, but this is the most complete statement of the instruction that he's giving, at least as far as the frequency is concerned. So here he says, on the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. So let's, to the best of our ability, try to figure out some of this. The definite article, the, is not there in the original language in this passage. So what we have to do is look at the two words that have been translated first. And that's the Greek 2596 and the Greek 3391. Those are Strong's numbers, and that's the way we untranslating English people look these things up. So Thayer's definition of 2596 is, it's according to, toward, along, down from, or throughout. I don't understand how that word relates to this phrase. It's that kind of escapes me, and I really wish that I had some of my English majors on hand tonight so we could try to understand the impact of this word. Then we look at 3391. That's the other word, the first day of the week. And this one is clearer to me. 3391, according to Strong, it's an irregular feminine. It means one or first. And this is a certain day. So in this case, it's first. And the first has some great meaning here.
And then I'd like, excuse me.
Go ahead.
I'd like to ask a question when you have a moment there.
Oh, go ahead.
I noticed that. What translation are you using?
Oh, this is the King James, and it's I use it in eSword. It's called the King James Plus.
Okay.
That's the one that has the little numbers so I can look things up.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask is because in mine, Revised Standard Version, it has every week, has the word every. And New American Standard Version also uses every.
Okay.
And then, so on the first day of every week.
Okay. Hold on just a second. Let me look at something very quickly. And I would think that that's a pretty important idea on the first day. Let me get to 1 Corinthians 16. Okay.
Dean?
Yeah.
Lee wants to say something.
Go ahead, Lee.
In my New American Standard, it also says on the first day of every week.
Okay.
Let each one of you partake. Yes.
Okay. Let's see. Week is from the Greek 4521. Thayer says it means the seventh day of each week, which was a sacred feast on which the Israelites were required to abstain from work. Let's see. Strong says a weekly repose from secular avocations. So this is the seventh day Sabbath. Now remember, there were other Sabbaths in the Old Testament. There was the 50-year Sabbath, and the 50th year is called a Sabbath. But this gives credence to the idea that this was a regular weekly occurrence when the first day of the week came around. That's good. It's a good point. I just don't see a word that would give me an indication that it's every week. That is in those translations. I just don't know where they get that from. The literal translation, Young's literal translation, doesn't have every in there. Young's literal translation says on, okay, it says every first day of the week. Doesn't say the first day of every week. So that this may be an idea that's coming from this combination of two words over here, 2596 and 3391. It may be that this is where they're getting every first day.
Dean?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Lee.
On the first day of every week, that's New American, and the Sabbath comes once every 7 days, so there should be no discrepancy there, correct?
Yeah, this is clearly a 7 day week. That's what we're talking about here.
So it also says in the New International Version, New American Standard, and Amplified Bible all have every week.
Right. I'm just to understand, that's a translator's decision to put the every in front of week. It could be every first day of the week, but I don't know about this, that's a translator's decision. That's all I'm saying. This is apparently something that was done regularly. We all agree on that. I think I don't know of anybody who, even though they may say that this is not something that happens, that the Lord's Supper is not something that happens every first day of the week, they would say that it is still something regular. Now, to return to 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, the idea is that every one of us will lay by in store, or lay by him in store. And that doesn't necessarily require the coming together, because we're, as some translations have it, we're setting aside and saving. Now, I conclude that it ought to be something that's done in the collection or the gathering, because of 3408. That's the same as its collection in the first time it's used. It's gathering in the second time that it's used. And so I think that there's something implied here that we are individually setting it aside, and it is being stored together. I'm not sure that we're storing it separately. Although, I think the separate storing is a possibility. Good thoughts, everyone. And, so 1 Corinthians 16 gives us some information. 1 Corinthians 16 is not talking about the Lord's Supper, but it does speak to, I think, the frequency with which they gathered. And remember, we saw in Acts, the second chapter, that they made it a practice to gather, at least in some capacity, every day. Other questions, comments? They're all good comments.
I sometimes was unable, when I was working, to meet on the first day of the week, but I still kept in mind that I needed to give my giving, and so I would give double the next time or whatever, and I have known other people that did that too. So is that would be collecting what I intended to give and giving it when I could?
Yeah, and you make a good point. I think what you were doing is you were setting it aside and saving it so that it could be put into this collective pot when you had an opportunity. And I think that meets, at least as I understand it, the instruction that was given here in 1 Corinthians 16. For some people, I know that there are some people who have understood 1 Corinthians 16 that they lay by and or set aside and save as God prospered them. And they make the point that they only get paid once a month. And so once a month, when they're prospered by God, they set this amount aside and they save it. And I know some other people who approach it and say, well, I know how much I'm going to get paid, so I just divide that up and I set that aside on the first day of every week. I think either one of those approaches probably meets the instruction that's given here in 1 Corinthians 16. And, I know some folks are farmers, and if you're a farmer, you only get prospered sometimes once a year when you sell your crop. The rest of the time, you have to live off of what you've been prospered. And so some of these folks might take the approach that I have prospered on this week, and so I set that aside and I give it on this day of the week.
Dean?
Yeah.
Do you really think that we can be that relaxed about when we are told every week?
I think we have to be aware that we need to, number one, use the money with which we've been prospered.
Mm-hmm.
That we have to do it without grudging.
Mm-hmm.
And that we ought to set aside and save on a regular basis.
Every week.
Well, my approach is every week, but like someone said, if I'm traveling on a Sunday, I don't contribute on that. Now, I know some people who say, I want to contribute on this Sunday. So I write my check out, I give it to one of the elders, and I say, would you please put this in the plate when it comes by on Sunday? I think that's also an approach. There are a lot of different ways that I think we can approach this.
I guess I'm just bothered that we can be so relaxed about something that is so very specific to me.
Okay.
To me, it says every week. And sure, we can say we don't get paid, we don't do this, we do that. I know some people who do this and some people who do that. But for some reason, it just is a black and white thing to me. And to try to get around that, I'm not sure that's the right thing to do. And I don't know. This is just something that has bothered me for a long time, that to me, it's black and white. It says every week. And we come up with all these reasons or whatever to do it, you know, once a month or whatever. So it's just okay. it's just me thinking out loud is all this is.
Hey, that's fine. But you make a very good point. You make an excellent point, and that's kind of the point that I'm driving at. When you read this, you in your mind, you see black and white. This is the way that it must be understood. And for you, that's what you have to respond to.
Right.
Okay. Now that's the premise that whatever we do has to be of faith. So if you read this and you see that, then that's what you have to do.
Yes. Good point.
The point that I want to make is not everybody is going to see that.
Correct.
And they have to live with what they see in this. And I don't think, you know, I don't think that they're trying to get around it or to somehow be lazy about this. I think they're just seeing something different in right. this. So that there's the danger is when we say, look, I see this. Why don't you see it?
Right.
You have to see it. And if you don't see it the way that I see it, then you're being lazy. And that's a real danger. Remember when we were talking about the Declaration and Address, Thomas Campbell, and he made a statement about how we could achieve unity. And if memory serves correctly, it's Proposition 6 in the Declaration and Address. Everyone has to live with expressly stated commandments. There's no question about expressly stated commandments. Baptism puts you into Christ. Okay? He says there are some other things that we know because we've reasoned about them. And I'm paraphrasing here. We can be together if we're willing to extend some grace to people who understand it differently, who are living what they see. Otherwise, we can't be together.
Dean, yeah. I think you just hit the nail on the head where you're talking about the inferences. I mean, it's like Lee said, the first day of the week, well, every week has one first day. So the implication is that the first day of the week. But the way that I also understand giving is I get paid once a month, okay? If I were to take it and divide it out after I got paid into four payments, then I wouldn't be giving as I prospered that first week. I would be making the decision that the week was more important than the prospering. So I don't know there. And then the other thing that I've heard is if you have somebody who has their car break and they have to go buy another car, and they may have to use the Corbin money that they were going to set aside and give to the Lord because they have to go to work and they have to provide for their family. That doesn't mean that in their head they don't say, okay, Lord, I'm going to give this to you again as soon as I can. But there are situations like David when his men were going through the field and eating the wheat heads or eating the showbread where everything's not black and white.
Yeah, and those are all very good points. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, it doesn't bother me to worship with Carol, who looks at it and says, I only get paid once a week, and I get, or once a month. And so I make a monthly contribution as I have been prospered. And to live with, in the same congregation with Vicky, who says, I get paid every 2 weeks. So, or every week, I don't know what Vicky's pay scale is. I don't mean to indicate that, but Vicky might say, I get paid every 2 weeks. So I give every other week. And somebody else who says, I get paid every week, I give every week, or I get paid once a month, but I set it aside so that I have it to give. We can be together. We have not reached the same conclusion. Our inference is different. Now, when it's commands, there's no sense in which one person says this is a commandment and I must do this. Other people look at it and say, this is the way I see the commandment. It's a matter of extending grace to other people who may see something different than what I see. You know, we've talked a lot about contribution and the Lord's Supper, and this extends to a lot of things. At one point in my life, I was a strict pacifist and would have my conclusion based on the biblical information was, if somebody attacked my wife or attacked me, I would not fight back. Now, I've since, reading the same stuff, I've since reached a different conclusion. So, you know, I got married to my wife, who said, do you mean you wouldn't defend me? And I said, no. She didn't see that. So sometimes it's not as easy to be together as we think it is. Now, let me just say this. When I was preaching in Alaska, we started a church and we had people who had very different understandings of some things. And what we said was, we're going to come together and we're not going to do anything that would mean that somebody can't worship here. So if you see that we ought to use one container to take the Lord's Supper, then if I insisted that we use multiple containers, you couldn't be here. So we used one container. That's extending grace. Now we eventually reached the point where he said, you know, after considerable study, he said, I'm convinced that we can use multiple containers. And so we again use multiple containers. There's some folks that have real problems with having pre-divided elements for the Lord's Supper, that we never have a loaf. I don't see that. And if there was somebody that concluded that we had to have a loaf, then maybe we would find a way to do that. Okay. Let's go back to the example in Acts 20. Paul comes to Troas, stays there for 7 days, celebrates the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week when he was there. Paul preaches. Eutychus falls out of a window because Paul is even more long-winded than I am. Goes down, finds out that Eutychus is still alive. And then verse 11 in Acts 20 says that they broke bread and ate. So there's something going on here. There was some sense in which they ate, they took the Lord's Supper to benefit their spirit, and they ate to benefit their bodies. So let's now go to 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter. And here we discuss more about the Lord's Supper. But if you look at 1 Corinthians 11, beginning at verse 17, and again, I'm using the King James translation tonight. He says, this that I declare unto you, in this that I declare unto you, I praise you not, that you come together not for the better, but for the worse. For first of all, when you come together in the church, I hear that there be divisions among you, and I partly believe it. For there must also be heresies among you, that they which are approved may be made manifest among you. When you come together, therefore, into one place, this is not to eat the Lord's Supper. In eating, everyone takes before another his own supper. One is hungry, another's drunken. What, have you not houses to eat and drink in? Or despise ye the church of God and shame them that have not? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I praise you not. For I've received of the Lord that which I also delivered unto you, that the Lord Jesus, the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. When he'd given thanks, he broke it. He said, take, eat. This is my body, which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me. After the same manner also, he took the cup when he had supped, saying, this cup is the New Testament in my blood. This do ye as oft as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you do show the Lord's death till he come. Wherefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the Lord unworthily shall be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. Let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. He that eateth and drinketh unworthily eateth and drinketh damnation to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. For if we would judge ourselves, we should not be judged. But when we are judged, we're chastened with the Lord, that we should not be condemned with the world. Therefore, wherefore, my brethren, when you come together to eat, tarry one for another. If any man hunger, let him eat at home, that you come not together unto condemnation. And the rest I'll set in order when I come. So let's look at this. This is not so much information about the frequency with which they came together, but it is information about the thing that they were doing that wasn't remembering the Lord's death. Okay? So as you begin this section, I think it's important to notice that the apostle is dealing with a problem that existed in Corinth, and that problem was division. I'm sure everybody can think of other ways that the church was divided, right? What comes to mind if we say there's the church in Corinth was horribly divided? What do you think of?
Station, money?
Could be.
What about the man who had his father's wife? Wasn't that dealt with in Corinthians?
Yes, it is. And I'm not sure that that was a case where they were divided, although they might have been. The apostle does give some indication that there are some people who might not have been happy with that situation. If you go back to the first chapter, what was the problem?
Didn't they also have false teachers?
Yes, they did. And not, they had false teachers who were telling them in the first chapter, look, you're a Pauline Christian, or you're a Petrine Christian after Peter, or you are a Barnabas-type Christian. And that should never happen. And the question is, was Paul divided? Or is Christ divided? Was Paul crucified for you? No. So this church, and they even fought over which spiritual gifts were the best. You know, and people were saying, well, I speak in tongues, and all you do is just heal diseases. Good grief. You know, I speak in tongues, and all you do is you have this gift that you can interpret the tongues, but without me, you're nothing. So this church is horribly divided. And what was happening with the Lord's Supper was just another demonstration of how divided this church was. And that's why when he starts this section, he says, there are divisions among you. That's the problem. He says, when you come together into one place, this is not to eat the Lord's Supper. You have taken the Lord's Supper and you've turned it into a way to demonstrate your division. And they should never have done that. So the first idea is that there are divisions among them. And he says, this is how far this goes. When you come together, one is hungry, one is drunken. One has nothing, and one has way too much. I don't think that as I look at this word drunken, and I didn't look at it tonight, but I have looked at it before. And we can look at that specifically. I don't think that the import of this is an alcoholic drunken stupor. I don't think that's the case here. When he says drunken, it's to be overfilled. So you have in your congregation there, you have this situation and you're trying to demonstrate it with the Lord's Supper. One is hungry, one is drunken. Then he says, don't you have houses to eat and drink in? Now, interestingly, he says, do you despise the church of God and shame them that have not? I conclude that there were some in Corinth who were desperately poor. Now, I know that that's the case in a lot of first century churches. It's probably the case today, although we are not in a situation where we have homeless individuals worshiping with us, but that's a possibility. I know that happened when I was worshiping at South Salem. And that was partly because we had the college right there. And when you have that kind of situation, you have college students who are living in their cars. So he says, have you not houses to eat and drink in? And here you are trying to shame people that don't, or that have not. And some translations talk about them being poor. So I know he's not saying all of you should be eating at home because you all have homes to eat in. That's probably not the case. But they're using the Lord's Supper as a way to drive a wedge between people that have and people that don't have. I was reading a story this week, came across one of my news feeds. It was a teacher that was talking about parents who send their kids to school with 50 pencils on the first day of school, and they sit down and they write their child's name on the 50 pencils so that they won't have to share with somebody that's in their class who doesn't have a pencil. That's really sad. And that's kind of the height of refusing the poor. Oh, you can come in. You can come to our school. We're not going to eliminate you from our school. You can be a part of our church, but we're not going to treat you like you are. So his statement, have you not houses to eat and drink in, has to be understood in terms of the end of that sentence or the end of that thought. They were trying to shame those that didn't. Now, you drop down all the way to the end, and he says, if any man hunger, let him eat at home, that you come together not unto condemnation. This is a passage that I have understood as indicating that you ought to eat at home. But I don't think the Apostle Paul is saying, you have a lot, this other person has nothing. So when you eat and you shame him and you don't share with him, do it at home. It's okay if you do it at home. I think that's just it occurs to me that that's a danger in the way that I have understood 1 Corinthians 11. Because despising the person who is poor is wrong, whether I do it at home or I do it in church. That's his whole point. Now, how does that relate to Acts 20 at verse 11, where it says that after Paul raised Eutychus, or found him alive, I don't know whether he did a miracle or whether he actually found him alive. After that, it says, they broke bread and ate. I have talked to people who see in that an indication that there was a meal that was associated with their assembly. It wasn't a meal that was associated with the Lord's Supper. It was a meal that was associated somehow with their assembly. And what they were doing is they were in Corinth, they were abusing this, refusing to share. Now, would it have addressed the apostles' concerns if they had come together, broken bread, and ate and shared? I don't know the answer to that question yet.
Dean?
Sure, go ahead.
It struck me here earlier before we started talking about this that the example, of course, is from the Passover that Jesus was eating the meal. And so they take that example, and they're eating a meal, and they're also doing the Lord's Supper. But what he's pointing out is that they're profaning the Lord's Supper in making it common, taking away the specialness, and making it common like a regular everyday meal.
Okay. Okay. Now, To Carol's point, understand that when the Apostle Paul concludes this, he says, I've just given you some of the things that we ought to be talking about here. The rest of this I'll set in order when I come. But let's, you know, there's more instruction that he gave to them than what we have here. I wish I had the rest of it. I wish I had everything that Paul said to them to correct their problem. But I don't.